I just learned last week that I was going to be doing this presentation this afternoon. I've been up getting acquainted with these very excellent, fine gentlemen from Tampere in Finland and learning how far that is from Helsinki and all sorts of other vital information. Jim Leary over here is an honest-to-God professor, just like Patrick got to be the other day. Patrick Feaster got his doctorate on Monday. Did everybody know that? Yeah. Indiana's getting rid of him. And that's not general knowledge. But Jim's got a resume a mile long, but he is here today in relation to this very lovely blue-back book. That doesn't say rockabilly. That would be from Memphis. This is the Goose Island Ramblers, a little semi-grass band that flourished in rural Wisconsin. Well, I heard their records, I guess, for the first time in the 60s. And they have sort of blended, as Jim will tell you, a wonderful melange of polka and bluegrass and WSM music, and put it together with its very own upper Midwestern sensibilities that are peculiar and very wonderful to this part of the world. I will introduce Jim Leary and get him to tell you more about it.
I'm actually going to pass around some stuff for you to look at. And as Dick mentioned, I've got a book.
Jim, I can do that if you want.
Oh, okay. I want these back. here's the book, and this is the CD notes.
What can I give away?
And then I've got a bunch of handouts that I'll make a mention of. And if you're interested in one, take one. I hope they don't run out, but they right. might.
This comes back to you, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the handouts have to do with a bunch of different kinds of archive-related projects that we have going at the University of Wisconsin. A lot of them are done through and in cooperation with the Mills Music Library, and we've begun to digitize and put up sites of a lot of our collections related to the traditional and ethnic music of diverse peoples in the upper Midwest, and particularly Wisconsin. And in addition, the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures that has been going for a couple of years that focuses on the languages and folklore of diverse people in the upper Midwest, we've also been able to create a number of archival projects and related sites. We're trying to kind of put a rope around all the publicly funded folklore documentation in the region that has been done over the past 30 or 35 years. And selectively to put up fairly comprehensive finding aids for those collections, and also we've begun to digitize things and make available, and in some cases reissue old products like sound recordings, or to convert photo text exhibits to virtual formats, and we're starting to put them up online. And we're also working with the Dictionary of American Regional English and the American Dialect Society, and also the Max Kade Institute for German-American Studies, to put on a project called America's Many Voices that has regional folk speech field recordings thereof from around the country. I'm a folklorist, and I was trained in folklore and American studies at Indiana University, but I grew up in northern Wisconsin in a little farming and logging and a resort town called Rice Lake. I was born there in 1950, and I had the good fortune of being around when I could hear still a lot of live music on the radio, a lot of live music in little halls and places roundabout, and that music reflected the cultural diversity and also the cultural interaction of people in my hometown. And so I heard not only Ojibwa or Chippewa drum groups, but I also heard Métis fiddlers playing when I was young. There was a number of Swiss yodelers around who would sometimes yodel over WJMC radio. There was from Weyerhaeuser, the Polish barn dance band that did a kind of a synthesis of country western or hillbilly music and Polish polka music. There was the Lenora Berg band that mixed Swedish and Norwegian old-time dance tunes with a lot of American and hillbilly standards. There was a guy named George Erickson who used to play in the ski lodge with his Slovenian-style piano accordion, but he would also do a lot of country music. There was a Czech band that played live out of Sokup's Tavern north of town over the radio. And I kind of grew up thinking that music was like this everywhere until I kind of left the area and found out that what I was listening to was considered to be strange and weird. And later on, as I became interested in studying traditional ethnic folk music, roots music, vernacular music, whatever you want to call it, I found that very little had been done on some of the traditions that I was familiar with growing up, and I also discovered that very little was known about the region in which I grew up, at least from the point of view of scholars, and also very little was done with regard to the development of archival collections documenting these kinds of traditions. And so I was lucky enough to be able to kind of set out to work. Of course, I had inspiration from various people, including Dick Spotswood in 1970, mid-70s. His wonderful multi-volume set for the Library of Congress and the American Folklife Center came out and was really the first comprehensive look at, inclusive look at the whole of American folk music, and was not only a great sonic document, but had wonderful notes and bilingual translations, including of Finnish American performers. And actually, in the late 70s, I started to do a lot of field recording in the upper Midwest, and I ran across two discographies published by a guy named Pekka Grona, who was a Finnish discographer. I just missed seeing him. He'd been over in Hancock, Michigan, taking away the entire 78 RPM collection of Rudy Kempa, who was a longtime DJ doing Finnish programs there. But I got his discographies, and I began to look at the repertoires of Finnish American performers who I was recording, and I found a lot of interesting correlations. And I also found, of course, that they had songbooks related to some of the performers, like Arthur Kylander, and also they had 78 RPM recordings. And that kind of got me going. Over the past 30 years or so, I've done a lot of field work and a lot of archival digging throughout the upper Midwest, and I've produced a lot of public radio programs and some documentary sound recordings. And recently, as Dick mentioned, I've come out with this book, Polkabilly, and the term is not my own. It's one that Roby Cogswell, a state folklorist in Tennessee, as far as I know, was the first one to coin when he heard performances by the Goose Island Ramblers, who we'll hear in a little while. Lately, I've noticed on the internet that the term is sort of around. I think there's a fair amount of independent invention, people trying to come up with a term that speaks to a fusion of a number of different kind of musical streams that we find in particular in the region where we are right now. And that fusion or creolization or hybridity or syncretism or whatever the hell you want to call it involves the sort of combination of reed instruments, particularly various squeeze boxes, concertinas, bandoneons, button accordions, piano accordions, with different stringed instruments, fiddle, guitar, mandolin, banjo, usually four-string banjo in this region, and sometimes the dobro or lap steel guitar or something like that. You also find the fusion of kind of step dancing, square dancing, reels, those kinds of mostly Anglo-American dances with round dances, couple dances, polkas, waltzes, schottisches, mazurkas, lendlers, oberics, and those sorts of things. You find the presence of multiple languages. Where I grew up, you know, I mentioned there were, I could hear people actually tell dialect jokes and speak on the street in Norwegian and French and Ojibwe and German and Finnish and a number of Czech and a number of other languages. But certainly if you went to a local dance, depending on who was there and if you were a good working musician, you would do a song for all the different ethnic groups, and you'd be able to sing at least one song in their language, maybe with a little more emphasis on your own. And in addition to those songs in diverse languages, including, of course, English, you found a lot that were mixed language songs that blended bits of English with some other language. language or that were that involve hybrid languages, Swenglish or Finglish or something like that, where you would have this dialectical fusion. And many of these songs would be comic songs as well, with a slightly theatricalized put-on dialect where the songs dealt with the difficulties of first-generation immigrants in encountering a number of situations in American life. And, of course, this fusion really involved the meeting of mostly Anglo-European, although some American Indian and mixed blood peoples with people of various European non-English speaking backgrounds. Over the past 30 years, I've done a lot of fieldwork, as I said, mostly in Wisconsin, but also in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, in northern Lower Michigan, in northern Ontario, in Minnesota, in Manitoba, and a little bit stretching into North Dakota and northern Illinois and northeastern Iowa. And by doing that fieldwork, by corresponding and getting to know a lot of active musicians and a few other folklorists and ethnomusicologists, and by digging into archival material and a lot of fairly fugitive publications, you know, reminiscences, local histories, that sort of thing, and also accumulating various sound recordings, you know, it became fairly apparent to me that there was a very definite regional upper Midwestern genre that we might call polkabilly that's marked by all these creolized characteristics that I mentioned, and that in addition to it being kind of in an upper Midwestern hearth, it obviously spills over into areas of Canada, including the prairie where you get Ukrainian kalimikas kind of mixed into things along with Métis fiddling, but you can also find it in places like Texas where Western swing bands and also Czech bands, German bands, fusion bands like Adolf Hoffner and his San Antonians would mix these non-Anglo-European traditions with Anglo-American dance pieces. And you also found it in areas like West Virginia, where very early on Germans settled into the area. You have old-time fiddlers like Clark Kessinger, for example. If you look at his repertoire, about a quarter of it is polkas, waltzes, schottisches, and marches, including a couple of tunes like Unter der Doppeladler, or Under the Double Eagle, and also Zum Lauterbach habe ich mein Strumpf gelorn, or Lauterbach, which was one of these old-time waltzes that Kessinger excelled with. There were also Italian and Slovak players, some of whom changed their names to like Doc Williams and his Border Riders, who nonetheless, in playing for their diverse ethnic audiences, would do some what I would call polkabilly music. Now, in relation to sound recordings, there's not a lot in the way of pre-World War II recordings of this. A lot of the sources that I've had to deal with have been written sources, and they've been also reliant on the memories of musicians who, some of whom were born in the early 20th century and through their parents and so forth, you know, they can stretch back into at least the latter half of the 19th century. And so by those kind of verbal accounts and the carrying on of certain stylistic traditions by descendants, you know, we can kind of read things backwards. But there are little bits and pieces of this kind of mixed genre that we can find on 78 RPM recordings. For example, in Chicago in the 1930s, there was a group called the Polish Mountaineers that did a number of really interesting songs involving fiddle and steel guitar and they really sound like Western swing bands, only they have some really hot, sort of almost Eastern-style Polish polka accordion runs in them with vocals in Polish, but they're singing to the tune of Stephen Foster's Camptown Races, but about a completely different subject matter and doing yodels and so forth, some really very cool recordings. One of their recordings has just come out on the back of that handout. There's a multi-CD set that the first two volumes of which have just come out called Folk Songs of Illinois, and on the, I think it's the first volume, there's a recording by the Polish Mountaineers. There was also another guy named Torstein Skarning who was an accordion virtuoso back in Norway. He made solo 78 RPM recordings of accordion playing. He came to my hometown in Rice Lake in 1908, and he immediately formed a band with a guy named Otto Rindlisbacher. And Otto was born of Swiss immigrant parents and played Swiss music very, very well, including on the little Swiss Schweizer Handorgel, a little Swiss button accordion. But since Otto grew up in a town where there are a lot of Norwegians, but also French people and Irish, and it was a logging town, my hometown, he learned to play a whole repertoire of lumber camp fiddle tunes. He also learned to play a whole lot of Norwegian tunes. He learned to build instruments, including hardanger fiddles, those eight or sometimes nine string Norwegian fiddles. And he played with Skarning's entertainers. They would play Norwegian music, and then Rindlisbacher and his wife would do a set of Alpine, Swiss Alpine music, and then they'd play for a dance. And at the dance, they'd mix Norwegian and Swiss stuff, but Otto would also play some of his lumber camp fiddle tunes, including Meti or mixed blood French Indian tunes. And then his wife, Iva, learned to play lap steel guitar in the 20s, and for a while they played in a Hawaiian band over WCCAO radio out of the Twin Cities with a couple of touring Hawaiian guys. And so they mixed some of that stuff into things as well in the 1920s. Otto made some commercial recordings in the 20s by actually traveling to New York City, and they were released on an obscure label out of Monroe, Wisconsin, called Helvetia. But he never recorded any kind of polkabilly sounds, although field recordings were made when he participated with the National Folk Festival as part of the Wisconsin Lumberjack troupe in the late 1930s. And so, again, if we look at 78's commercial ones, there's not a lot we can find, but we can find the beginning of the sound recorded in the 30s for the Library of Congress on discs done by folklorists and ethnomusicologists. Among them, Alan Lomax. It's not probably well known that in 1938 he made a trip of several months. He was hoping to do what he called a rapid 3-month survey of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, and he never got out of Michigan except for one day in Wisconsin. And from looking at his correspondence and field notes, he drank a lot of beer because that was very important in that particular cultural scene. But he also recorded incredible amounts of many, many discs with some amazing performances, including French Canadian ballad singers influenced by Jimmy Rogers, including Finnish immigrant singers singing songs about a lonely Finnish merchant seaman who's left his sweetheart behind, but it's sung to the tune of When the Work's All Done This Fall, or then to the tune of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. There's a Finnish guy singing about how temperance Finns and those who drink will somehow meet up into heaven and get drunk and play the accordion, and St. Peter will be dancing along. You also got performers like Joe Cloud and his son Clarence. Joe was an Ojibwe fiddler, and his son Clarence played four-string banjo, and they played two-steps and waltzes, but they also played Meti tunes like the Red River Jig. And there are a number of other examples. Polish female duet doing in their best Slavic American dialect an a cappella version of Gene Autry's There's a Gold Mine in the Sky, and some really interesting twin fiddle performances by Polish fiddlers from Posen, where they were not only playing traditional Polish tunes with cool titles like The Lice That Ate the Pants, but also they were doing Turkey in the Straw and the Irish Washerwoman, but with that kind of Vieska or village style emphasis with a kind of it's not quite garali, but a semi-sawing syncopated kind of backup fiddle and a real skittery thin-toned lead fiddle, and it you can hear the Polish style meeting the Anglo-American repertoire. Okay. In the post-World War II era, a number of small regional labels in this neck of the woods began to record, it's a familiar story, all sorts of things that major labels wouldn't either look at in the first place or wouldn't deal with in the post-World War II era. And there were lots and lots of these labels like Soma in Minnesota or a Pleasant Peasant. In Wisconsin, three of the most interesting ones to my mind were Polka Land and FAU, both of which were started by people who ran electrical appliance stores, FAU right here in Milwaukee, and just up the road in Sheboygan, Polka Land. FAU included the first 78s made by Dave Dudley, who's, I can't remember what his real name is, he's a Polish guy from northern Wisconsin. Before he went on to do 6 days on the road, he recorded for FAU. But the one I'm going to talk about most in relationship to the Goose Island Ramblers is the label KUKA that was founded in Sauk City by a guy named Jim Kirchstein, who was a Korean War veteran, and he had an audio engineer degree from University of Wisconsin, and he used, after he got his degree on the GI Bill, he set up a little recording studio and had a small radio station operating out of Sauk City, Wisconsin. And he had a kind of an open door policy. He didn't charge anything for people to record, but then he signed them to his label, and then he would produce 45s and LPs. And he recorded lots of polka and polkabilly and a whole lot of other performers. And what really kind of put him on the map and allowed him to go on for a while was a sort of a one-hit wonder thing by the Fendermen out of Middleton, Wisconsin, that did a rockabilly version of Bill Monroe's bluegrass version of Jimmy Rogers' Mule Skinner Blues. And it was a big, big seller. And Kirchstein made enough to really kind of get his studio going. The group that, to my mind, epitomizes the polkabilly sound is the Goose Island Ramblers, and they're comprised of three guys, Wendell Whitford, Bruce Bolerud, and George Gilbertson, and they played very actively from the early 60s to the mid 70s in Madison, Wisconsin, and then kind of got going again in the early 90s and played for about 10 years. Two of them are still living. The oldest one, Wendell Whitford, was born in 1913. His grandfather, who was born in 1849, was an old-time fiddler who came from New York State, but his family settled in southern Wisconsin, just where a bunch of fiddling Norwegians had settled. And we know that by about the 1850s, they were exchanging tunes. And so Wendy's grandfather, by the 1850s or 60s, was actually playing a lot of Norwegian tunes. And so Wendy grew up in this community with a kind of a mixed repertoire of Anglo-American tunes and Norwegian tunes. His grandfather had also been a fife player back in New York in fife and drum bands, and so he knew a lot of old fife tunes and marches and so forth. There was another guy named George Gilbertson who was born in a tar paper shack in Madison. His father was a Norwegian sailor who settled in Madison, and he grew up in a community where there were rural Irish players who'd come to town, and they would play jigs and reels and so forth. There were a lot of German musicians on the east side of Madison and Norwegians as well. And both Wendy and George were swept away by the cowboy and hillbilly craze in the 20s, and also by Hawaiian music. And the third member came from a rural area, southwest Wisconsin, where he was Norwegian, and they had Norwegians on their family farm, but they also had Swiss neighbors. So he learned Norwegian and Swiss repertoires, but then Whoopi John with a German bohemian sound was sweeping through, and then the Swiss were also captivated by Frankie Yankovic's Slovenian music. So the group put all of those kinds of things together, and it's not unlike what happened with many, many other groups. Now, I know we're going to...
Getting close.
Yeah, we're getting close. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to play a couple of short excerpts from two songs. One is a very well-known kind of Anglo-American tune from the early 20th century, The Wreck of the Old 97, and we'll play a kind of a polkabilly version of that.
They gave him his orders down in Monroe, Virginia, saying, pick your way behind time. This is not 38, but it's 097. We'll cut her in and run her through on time. Cut her in there, Ruth. His cold black fireman saying, shovel on a little more coal. When we cross that white rolling mountain, we'll watch old 97 roll. Listen to her roll.
I'm going to cut it off here, because, but it's kind of cool. I mean, they do different breaks. Wendy played guitar, but he also played Norwegian-style fiddle. George was multi-instrumentalist. That was him on dobro, and then he switched to harmonica, and then he does a juice harp solo. He was also a hell of a fiddler. He was a state champion in Wisconsin for the Centennial in 1948. And then Bruce Bollerud played the bandoneon, mostly the piano accordion, but he played the jug, and he does a jug solo on this. And his jug is partly influenced by African-American jug playing, but also influenced by German or Dutchman-style tuba players. I'll play one last little bit, and it's a tune that was originally recorded on the Foul label here in Milwaukee. It's called Milwaukee Waltz, and it's got this Bruce is both doing his drunk act, singing like he's drunk, and of course that's part of the German stereotype, and he's putting on a German dialect, and he's intentionally playing badly, and but it's an interesting instrumentation because it's guitar, piano, accordion, and mandolin, which is not something you hear all that often. Okay, let's try this.
Sorry, the beer flows like wine. After 16 small bottles, the band sounds fine. They're laughing, they dance, and they have a good time. You're in the middle of a hockey bar.
And they, you know, they were clowns. They do kind of goofy stuff, and wear strange costumes and actually this they close with the Spike Jonze thing. You know, thank you music lovers. They did at the end of this, and they also had some novelty instruments. So George played the electric toilet plunger, which is a one string toilet plunger, and then he played an instrument called an eight banger that was a mandolin neck. Yeah, it was a mandolin neck mounted on a fiddle body, and it was played with a cello bow, and it was just sort of weird. It kind of sounded like a hardanger fiddle with overtones and so forth. But just a few very quick concluding remarks. You know, so what? I think labels like Kooka and groups like the Goose Island Ramblers give us some really solid evidence of a very widespread phenomenon that's out there in American life that falls between the cracks of the categories that have been looked at, but is nonetheless characteristic of the Upper Midwest as a region and many, many other sort of industrialized backwoods areas where, you know, Slavs and Germanic people and Finns and so forth have come to work as industrial workers in Rock Springs, Wyoming, or wherever, and mix their repertoires around. And I think these groups compel compel us to reassess our notion, our understanding of what constitutes American folk or vernacular music. And you know, and I think it opens us up to consider that this music is always a process. That really the nature of American music is a kind of a continuous evolution and interaction and creolization of many, many different strains. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
A quick question or two for Jim. I don't know what to ask. I mean, I've heard a wonderful 10 hours worth of information.
It has nothing to do with what exactly what you were speaking about. Pardon me? Well, it isn't that important. It's a whole point of information.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, with the book, you got the CD in the back, yeah, but that insert doesn't come with the book.
Oh, no. What I did with... Richard March of the Arts Board and I co-produced about 175 half-hour programs on traditional music of the Upper Midwest for Wisconsin Public Radio. And what the CD in the book has excerpts from about three or four of those shows.
Right.
And so it has partial tunes or sometimes full tunes from the band, along with our commentary, along with interview excerpts from the musicians. And there's a but the CD booklet that I passed around is from a, you know, a separately produced CD.
Because we've already had, you know, your book already. And we prepared it ready for the library shelves. And I see that booklet and I says, well, wait a minute, you know.
There's a CD that's
available
in the early 90s, and there are a number of other CDs by the group, and there's a discography in the back of the book.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Thanks. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Is that it? Anyone else for?